You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue here on a Friday. Joining me is Michael Musso. Nothing, man. How are you? You getting your
difficulties again today.
Technical
You got me.
I got you. You're Lima, okay. Lima Charlie. Over.
Roger.
Well, that just rolls out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. So what are you doing? How was your lunch yesterday?
Oh, it was great, man. So, like I said, I called you yesterday. We got back from the doctor's appointment. So, yeah, good guys, man. I mean, so we did a lot of tree. Well, because of the bad winds, a lot of trees, I told you, branches fell in Ralph's driveway in his yard, so. The other two guys, Biff and David, we all went over there, cleaned up his yard, and took all the trees and cut them up and hauled them away.
You got a chainsaw?
No, I don't. Those guys do. I was telling those guys, I said, man, I got to go back and tell Tina we need a chainsaw.
You got to have one, man. Come on.
I know, but she's going to look out the back door and go, really? Maybe in 20 years when these trees in our backyard grow to some kind
of... No, that's not the point. When you got to be able to help. You got to be able to... Yeah, you got to be able to pitch in. Your man's got to have a chainsaw, man. And don't go buy an electrical one.
No.
Yeah.
I'd get like the ones at the lumberjacks.
Exactly. You got to have a chainsaw. I mean, it's part of being a man, having a chainsaw.
You got a chainsaw?
I did. I had one in North Dakota. Don't need one in California.
I did too, but you didn't need one in California.
Yeah, exactly. So chainsaws are, first of all, they're, you gotta get some lessons on how to employ them and they're certainly, but come on, they're a good time.
Shit. It's just a power tool. You don't have to be taught anything.
Well, there's a few subtle things that you ought to know about a chainsaw. Things like knots in wood and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's helpful. You can learn that stuff on your own, and hopefully everything turns out well. But it's always good to meet guys like Ralph that say, hey, killer, let me give you some pointers with that thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
You know what? They have that chainsaw on a stick, you know, the telescopic pole, the ones that you can really do the pruning with.
Yeah.
Those are cool, too.
You know what? Those are really cool. In fact, you know, there's more and more technology with tools now that make them very, very handy. Cordless tools, right? That you can get in small places and do things that you probably couldn't have done before. So I'm. Are you a tool guy? I mean, I love tools.
Yeah, I have all sorts of power tools. I got planers, joiners. I mean, you name it, I can do just about everything in my garage.
What's your, of the tools that you own now, what's your favorite one?
Probably I like the Dremel kit that I got because it's pretty elaborate. And so you could do a lot of things with it. You could cut stuff, you could polish stuff, you could sand stuff. You know. So I use the Dremel for my dog's nails sometimes to, you know, sand them down, because I don't clip them. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like the sound of the Dremel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that thing going off. He's just like, what the hell is that?
So when you guys as a group go to lunch, where do you guys go? What kind of, who picks the place?
For the Wednesday lunch, usually it's, Biff that picks it, because he is the elected president of our group, informal election, of course. But no, he picks it, and it's usually a local place around here, and we kind of go back and go around. Every once in a while, we try and get close to Buck's shop so Buck can attend, because, you know, he's one of the working guys of the group. So we get close to him and go over there, and there's a Mexican place, and then there's like a burger place.
What'd you get yesterday?
Yesterday I had a Mediterranean salad at the Italian place.
What?
Yeah, it's good.
A Mediterranean salad? That doesn't sound like, it sounds like a beef-eating group right there, man.
It is, and usually I would, but because we got there a little late, and then I was kind of late getting off the phone. Those guys had already ordered, and then we still had to make Ralph's medical appointment, so I didn't want to be the guy holding everybody up, so I left it on the salad.
All right. I respect that. I respect that. What about, you're welcome. What else is going on? How's the weather in Texas?
Today it's beautiful. Yesterday it was gorgeous, too.
Really? Do you now?
Yeah.
Where you live? Do you guys have any spring issues relative to thawing and water and flooding or anything like that?
No.
None of that.
Nope.
Huh? No. The only thing you guys deal with is the occasional tornado, and it's not even tornado season, is it yet? It's tornado season. What, the midsummer, late
yeah,
summer?
Yeah, it started.
Oh, it has.
Yeah, it started. I mean, so no, but we don't deal with. Usually it's high winds, hail, does the most damage around here. And, you know, yeah, your occasional tornado. We had a EF4 go through Granbury, I think 2 years before I got here, 2013. Yeah, I think so.
And
killed six people.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
So do you have a lot of people that part of the nation have cellars that they go into? Does your house have a cellar?
No, we don't have a cellar. What we have is we have an inner built room that's reinforced.
With?
And that's where we'd go.
Reinforced, what does that mean?
It means just that it's the structure, the framing in it is stronger than normal.
Okay, so it's not
inner room within the house.
Okay, so it's not steel reinforced, it's just reinforced, it's thicker, sturdier wood.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, there's brick and stone in the design in there to make it look pleasable or eye catching, so, but it's still pretty good stuff.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Now, you know, I find it interesting, you know, on the West Coast, you know, people get very, that didn't grow up out here, get very excited about, you know, when we have small earthquakes. But the Midwest, in my opinion, is one of the most deadly places in the country to live, simply because, the tornadoes that roll through are unbelievably destructive. And the power of those
storms, storm systems,
wow,
yeah.
Is incredible. And what we just had the other day, there was storm chasers that ran into each other and were killed doing that little piece of work. But if you've ever seen them and been around them, I mean, they really are phenomenal. And I mean, you know, it's one of the interesting things about being in the Marine Corps is when you go around the world, the incredible weather phenomenons that you see. And Mike and I both have a similar experience, being on an aircraft carrier, going most of the way around the world. I think Mike, Might have got a little bit further around the world than I did in terms of going from the east coast of the United States to the west coast. I did not see that part of the world, but going from the west coast of the United States up towards the North Korean Peninsula or the Korean Peninsula, and then coming back, and then going to the Persian Gulf and on an aircraft carrier and coming back, or to the Straits of Hormuz. We didn't go in the Persian Gulf at that time. And staying there and coming back, you see a fair amount of the world, and you see a lot of crazy weather. Give me your craziest weather experience in the Pacific.
We went through a typhoon. I was on LSD, by the way. That was something else. All the other ships, because we weren't as fast as everybody else, so all the big deck and all the other ones took off and kind of like, hey, we'll meet you over here. And so we had to ride it out through the storm.
And so did you guys, were you on the ship when it hit, or were you ashore and normally those things go?
Oh, no, we were middle of the Pacific, man.
Well, what was that like on a flat-bottom ship?
It was, it was pretty bad. It was, just the tossing and turning. No one was eating. You know, everybody's getting sick. So, yeah, It was not good, to say the least.
The craziest weather I was ever in the Pacific was, I saw one crazy thing in the Pacific and then one in the IO. In the Pacific, we were up near Korea. Actually, what happened was the Midway is a World War II aircraft carrier. And it was not keeled to have, it was not built to have an angled flight deck on it. And they dropped an angled flight deck on it. And it gave it a permanent list to starboard of what, like 7 degrees or something like that. Well, and then engineers in the Navy said, you know, we can fix that. We can balance that a little bit by putting these blisters on the hull of the ship. And it'll right the flight deck. And, you know, it'll,
right.
So anyway, well, what happened was, so they take it to sea, and they were right. It corrected but the flight deck would snap. It would hold tension, and then it would snap quickly. And if there happened to be an aircraft landing, it would crush the landing gear of the aircraft. And once this happened multiple times, they said, we can't do this. They said, oh, so we can't support Team Spirit this year. What? Well, that means somebody else is going in his place? Who's next? Oh, the Ranger would be next in San Diego. So we got told, pack your trash. We're going to Korea. We'll be gone for 2.5 months. Okay. So we're up there, and it was just, I don't know if it was a typhoon, but it was the craziest storm I've ever been through in my life on a ship. And we're talking about a 1,000-foot aircraft carrier that was getting thrown around like it was a little tugboat. And I thought literally the ship was going to snap in two. The noises it was making, I'd never heard. Slamming sounds as you can imagine, those gigantic swells in the ocean. And just suppose that you hit one where these things are huge and the top, the front of the ship happens to be going up. And then this thing rolls with this huge trough behind it. And you have an aircraft carrier doing that. And I thought, good God, this thing's going to snap in half. And it was absolutely crazy. And it's like, well, how are our escorts, like, even going, like the destroyer behind us? How is that thing still even? And guys who came over, you know, for instance, they come over to go to the dentist. And things like that we have on an aircraft carrier that they don't have. And you ask them about, hey, how was that? They're like, you literally strap yourself in bed. Well, we were strapped in bed, and they say, shut up. Don't even talk to me about this thing. Like, we were, like, how we didn't roll over, it's absolutely attributable to engineering. And then the other crazy thing you see in the IO, I think during monsoon season, is it's the Indian Ocean gets flat with no swell to it. It's just flat.
Yeah.
It's like a lake in the morning, right, Mike? It's like if you're ever around a lake and you get up early and you see just it's flat like a mirror, it is the weirdest thing in the world. And here you're out there, flat as glass, and flying fish flying around.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is. It's really cool. Things that, you know, you're just, wow, as you get around the world. What's the craziest thing you've ever, give me a couple crazy thing that you've seen on land. How about in Iraq?
What do you mean? Craziest thing? Oh, dust storms?
Crazy, yeah. The wall of dust is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. That if you've never been through one, that's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's disgusting,
and it gets
too.
Everywhere. I don't care if you think you're in an area where it's airtight or, you know, dust is getting in. And it sucks. That fine brown, so it's so small. You're breathing it in. It's nasty, man.
And it's hot,
but
too. You know what I mean? It's hot.
Yeah.
Well, at least the one I went through. And it's funny because you look and you see it coming. It's this brown wall, and you're watching it come across the desert, and, you know, you hear people yelling or something. You go, what's going on? They're like, oh, I guess it's here. And you walk outside, and here it is. It's like this wall of brown, and then pretty soon you're engulfed by it. And what surprised me was that the air temperature went up noticeably. It went up, I don't know, 10 degrees or something in the one I went through in Ramadi. And as Mike said, it's windy and dust is going everywhere. And you're sweating and you're dirty and you're sleeping in it. It's just disgusting. And it doesn't last for 30 minutes or so. They last for days.
And the one, yeah. Then it slowly gets lighter and right. Lighter and lighter. Then it's gone.
And then when it's gone, there's dirt everywhere. And there was a fight, I know, where I was living, there was a fight because people wanted to open windows because it was too hot, you know, and they couldn't sleep. Hey, man, we got to open the window. If you open the window, man, that shit is going everywhere. The dust storms. What about Afghanistan? Anything crazy in Afghanistan? Afghanistan, pretty sane weather, right?
Yeah, we had a dust storm or two when we were in Afghanistan, but not as bad as Iraq was.
Yeah, mostly wind that kicked up dust, but the dirt storms in Iraq, it's like it's raining dirt. It's like one of the plagues in the Bible or something like that. It's raining dirt everywhere.
The stuff in Afghanistan was, it was mostly in the spring and the fall when the extreme weather changes would be. You know, at night, if you didn't have protective clothing, you'd die of hypothermia. And then during the day, you're sweating your balls off. You know, it could be like, it'd get to like 100 degrees during the day, and that was not bad in Afghanistan. But at night, it would drop to like 50, and it would drop so rapidly, and you got a 50-degree temperature change, your body just goes almost into shock. Those were horrible, man.
Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, so other than that, Afghanistan was actually pretty normal, other than just being hot. Then the rest, it's Afghanistan very much like 29 Palm, hot, dry, and then when it gets to the winter, you know, it's pretty moderate and pretty nice during the day, and then it heats up again. What other parts? I never really. Spent much time in the Philippines, went through there a few times. How about weather in the tropics?
Like the rains, the monsoons, you know, where it just constantly rains, you're constantly wet, you can never get dry. The humidity coupled with that, it's just, that's nasty too, man. I mean, you think about, I mean, we've been on a station in England. The rain in where I was at in England would come across, and it would go horizontal. It felt like it never touched the ground. The winds were so high and it rained. It was just, oh, those days were horrible too.
What is your least favorite weather condition that you've ever lived in?
I don't like heat.
Heat?
So, yeah. I can do cold,
well done.
But I can't do heat.
You know,
like,
what?
Real hot. And people here are like, oh, Texas is hot. No, it's not. It gets really warm, but it's not hot.
What's hot?
You know,
give me hot.
hot is living in an LEV and the outside temperature is 125 or so, and the inside temperature LEV is like 145, 160. You can slow cook a roast at 160.
And then
you're in that vehicle.
And if you have to be standing up, you get, there's a fan that sits over the engine of an LEV and blows right in the face.
Hot air discharge over the engine.
It blows right in the face of the vehicle commander and the gunner. Every time you move. Every time you move. I was going to tell a disgusting story. You know how when you get really, really dry air and you get these, like, crazy dry boogers in your nose? If you're in an LEV and you're in a desert and you're working all day, that affliction, it's like you pull stuff out of your nose, it feels like it's coming out of, like, your shoulder.
It's like a root system of a tree.
Exactly.
From that dry,
just
dusty
that
air.
Dry, dusty air up your nose. And even if you put like a scarf over your face, which you know helps keep the moisture of your breath, you know, in the scarf, and it doesn't help. It doesn't help. My least favorite weather condition is humidity. You know, heat. You know, okay, but when combine the humidity with it, I hate that. The other thing is with humidity normally comes bugs. Unless you're in Kuwait when it's 140 and everything's dead. There's nothing that even flies through this air like that. So.
Yeah, Kuwait is a different type of humidity. It's really thick. I mean, it even slows your progress down. I mean, it's hard to walk. It feels like there's a lot of resistance.
Yeah, it is. It is honestly when, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, you know, we do reverse training and blah, 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 blah. In Kuwait, you couldn't train. You couldn't, like, if you try to function during the day in the summer, just forget about it. It's just simply too hot and too humid. It's crazy. Here's an email. Hey, Mac, I vote for Kuwait. I was there four different times coming and going, and every one of them was either near or at the peak of the heat. And that place is the worst. I never want to go back to that place. I don't even like to look at the name of that place on a piece of printed paper. It seriously is the hottest place I've ever been, the most uncomfortable place I've ever been. And I don't even know something that's close to it. 29 Palms right. On its worst day is not even close to Kuwait. Iraq on its worst day with the heat, it's... I'm like, this is funny when people say it. It might be 133, but it's a dry 133. And you know what? That's true. That it sounds stupid, but it's true. And so anyway, I remember in Afghanistan when it got to 100, we were like, damn, how could we ever have thought this was hot? Right?
Yeah.
You were walking and everybody's happy. It's like, wow, it's so nice out here. And it's 100 degrees. It's 100 degrees.
Oh, this is depressing, man. I'm getting depressed.
Why? All the bad weather? But you said, but again, and you've lived in England. Where else? Any other place that you've lived on the world?
No. England was the only place that I actually was stationed overseas. The other times it was just deployed. So I was just, you know, you deploy to different regions.
Right.
But, the only place I lived was in England.
All right. What else? I've got a couple. I got a gun email. You want to do gun talk right now?
Yeah, I can answer a gun email.
Okay. All right. Hey, Mac, I'm looking for a place to shoot here locally. I like to shoot long rifles. I have a restored M14, and I love to take it and shoot. Is there an easy way to find places to shoot long rifles? Or is it one of those things you got to find somebody that knows somebody, especially if you want to shoot at distance? Mike, is there a secret to find it? Is there a secret to find in places to shoot with long rifles?
Is there a secret? Yeah. Well, no. I mean, you just really just Google search for long range distance ranges.
Yeah.
But a lot of those, in my experience, a lot of places like that are closed membership only. Because there's a lot of concern with where that bullet goes, so they want to make sure that you're a good, your intentions are good and what you want to do. There's other avenues you can get into some clubs and some shooting groups. I don't know if the NRA does a long range, type area. But I would ask at your local gun dealer and see what they know. Inquire, get on the internet and look around, go to Pistol Bay or something. A lot of the owners of those places know one another. They're interconnected. And, just ask around. But like I said, in my situation, depending on what state you live in, a lot of those places require kind of a membership. You gotta join. And that's not hard. It's just getting into that arena and getting into that group of people, because long range shooters can be a little different. They're chasing that ultimate bullseye target, at 1,000 yards. So they're different.
So bottom line is ask around, and then you got to go socialize, and you got to become one of the group.
Yeah. And figure out, where you can do it safely, and then just go knock it out.
Right. All right. Let me read you an email. This is forwarded to me by a friend of mine from North Dakota. Letter to the editor. Why no training rules for the new concealed carry law? I'm writing because of concerns I have about the new constitutional carry bill recently passed by our legislators and signed by the governor. Don't get me wrong. I support the Second Amendment. I don't have a problem with concealed carry. I just do not understand why a safety class with perhaps a test at the end, a background check, and a permit aren't a good idea. Why make it so terribly easy for more people to legally carry a concealed weapon? After all, the Second Amendment does contain the phrase, a well-regulated militia. As a high school teacher of 25 years, I taught a lot of 18-year-olds. Some 18-year-olds have a high level of maturity, many do not. Experts say that the rational part of a human brain is not fully developed until age 25. Combine that with the fact that North Dakota ranks extremely high among states for excessive consumption of alcohol, and I think that could be a lethal combination. Will this law lead to more accidental shootings, intentional shootings, and or suicides among North Dakota's young people? Only time will tell. I hope our legislators and governor have not made a big mistake. Patricia Loden from West Hope, North Dakota. Your thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, I thought that the law was that they still had to go through a training class.
No, it's just the open book test that you take to get a class 2 firearm in North Dakota. That's it.
Well, and like you know my point of view on that. Then it's I agree with her. I think there should be a training program. Now the what people don't understand too in constitutional carry is there's no reciprocity with other states. Other states don't recognize constitutional carry as far as if you want to carry it into South Dakota, because they want some type of training class, liability, whatever, what have you, to be taught. So a lot of places that, have constitutional carry on the books, you can't carry outside that state.
Interesting. What do you make of the whole Mike Flynn wanting immunity to testify? Have you followed that, or you? Because you don't talk about the news very much anymore.
Yeah, and you're
a happier human being too.
Yeah, I'm in a better place, man.
So let's talk about that. So not so much time watching the news, and more time volunteering and doing other things.
Yes, then I feel better. I don't know. When you just said that, that's the first time I heard of it. So what does he want to testify on?
About the whole Russian presidential campaign thing. I'll just read you the first paragraph. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn is in discussions with the House and Senate Intelligence Committees on receiving immunity from unfair prosecution in exchange for agreeing to be questioned as part of the ongoing probes into possible contacts between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and Russia, his attorney says.
I don't believe anything yet until, see what happens at the end. I mean, this whole Russians, did something to intervene in our election process, and everybody's upset about it. Again, I mean, it's like...
No, that's not my question. My question is, why does Flynn need immunity?
Well, because he doesn't want anything coming back on him.
Like...
Doesn't mean he's necessarily guilty. No, it doesn't mean that he's guilty.
Okay. All right.
He just doesn't want anything to be brought back on him. Everybody assumes, I mean, you just did it, that, hey, if you're asking for immunity, you got to be guilty.
Right.
No. If you ask for a lawyer, it doesn't make you guilty either. It makes you smart. Cops come to your door and they say, can I answer some questions? And if you say yes, you're an idiot. Even if you had nothing to do with it, people say, well, I have nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter. They're not on your side.
Okay, so I shouldn't, so I shouldn't judge Flynn.
No.
Okay. All right. I'll take your advice.
Majority of the time when law enforcement wants to question you and they say, well, we're just asking you questions, but you have nothing to do with this. We just want to clarify some things. Well, here, you talk to my lawyer. Well, do you have something to hide? No, I'm just smart. I don't want you to misconstrue anything I say or take it out of context.
All right, Montana man wants to weigh in. You ready for this?
Oh, God.
You know what? That's how he's known now. It's Montana man. I'll get an email. Hey, Mac, Montana man, blah, blah, blah. Montana man. See, it's better to just not watch the news. It helps the blood pressure.
See, he's right.
Just,
that's like the third time ever.
Just go on about your day, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Quit. You want to get healthy? Quit watching the news.
Quit watching the news. You'll feel better. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Email. Hey, Mac. I'm obsessed with the news. My question to you is, how do you stop watching it? Gunner?
Okay, that's a real simple question. You see that button on your remote that says on? Don't hit it. Or block some of these smart channels.
Yep.
Block all that news. Just block it. Or subscribe to something and put those filters on, and all you want to see is other good stories.
Okay, so
informative stories. So what's going on in the community?
Okay, so in your world, in your house, were you the news watcher? Does Tina like to watch national news and things like that?
No, she hated it.
Okay, so now you come home. So you're out in the community. Chopping wood, going to lunch, helping people, doing stuff that makes you feel good. And then when you come home, you just don't turn it on? Or do you watch other things? What do you do?
I record. Now I got, check this out. I got Apple Play.
Yeah.
Or Apple TV.
Okay.
You got that?
No.
Apple TV, you can go specifically to different programs and watch the episodes.
Okay.
You don't have to go to TV anymore. There's no commercials. There's no, there's nothing in there that makes you feel bad. Everything is good. And that's Apple TV. And it's a little box. You plug it into your TV, hooks up to your Wi-Fi, and then you can access. So you can access you know, if you're a Bravo fan, if you're Time Warner movies, if you're, or Turner movies, if you're, you know, whatever kind of big network, you just tune into that, watch the shows that you want. You want to watch shows about building houses or restoring houses, that's on there, cooking, hunting, you know, National Geographic. You can watch animals go out there, do their thing in the, to each other in the wilderness, whatever. But there's no news. I don't care.
Montana man said he blocks CNN. That keeps my wife from asking me current events questions.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, it goes back to what's, how do we know what's true anymore? We know, we all know the fact. News agencies do not always tell you the truth. Fact. Okay. So how do you know they're not telling you the truth? How do you know this time they're truthful? How do you know that this time it's not about viewership and rating? Because they said so?
Oh, boy.
You know, how many, think about it. How many times does, you know, Sean Hannity or Megyn Kelly or anybody like that opens their mouth and it's nothing but bias,
bullshit,
viewpoint.
Right. And you could list, you know, you could list 100 people under those names too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I just
right?
use those two because the
right, they're prominent,
head,
right?
Every single one of them. You know, even our news guys that we know, like Chris, who's the guy that got busted for lying? Chris something? Chris Wallace?
No, the guy from NBC, Brian Mitchell? No, Brian, what's
Brian Williams.
Brian Williams, yeah.
You know, there's a prominent name that everybody knows, and he lied to us. And if he lies about the little shit, guess what?
Anchor of you know? NBC Nightly News.
Yeah, and if you lie about little shit, and then you tell me, oh, you know what, I'm just a liar when it comes to little stuff. The big stuff, though, I'm going to tell you the truth. You're lying to me right now.
Maybe, you think we should outlaw the news?
Well, we should make it a criminal offense if you report nothing but the truth.
All right.
By spreading false accusations, insinuating, I'm sure if you had a good enough lawyer team, bring it to the judge, and, you know, get them for,
libel?
Liability when it comes to like riots and, you know, other shit. Cause think about all the news agencies again, the truth behind some of those shootings, the one in Missouri, that wasn't truthful. They didn't tell the whole story.
No.
They told the story that would cause mayhem.
Yeah. No, without a doubt.
And how many people lost property over that? Who's liable?
No, nobody. They're just reporting.
They're
just reporting
people
the
spreading the information. Now, Smack, if you go around telling lies about somebody, you know, a personal person, and you tell lies about them, they can bring a lawsuit against you.
Right.
What's the difference? Why do people?
Well, because if I do it, while I'm covering the news, and again, I agree with you. I mean, from the start, it seemed, and if you just the Ferguson thing. CNN seemed obsessed with what was the story there? The story there was a
white policeman shoots an unarmed black man after he surrendered.
Right. That was the story. And how he gunned him down.
Yeah, in cold blood. Murder.
In cold blood. So what did CNN do? They went there and they blew it up. And it was all based on a lie. That's not, he wasn't getting on his knees. Big Mike wasn't getting on his knees, putting his hands up. He had already assaulted the officer in his car. He turned to come back at him, and they'd already fought over a gun once. And the officer was perfectly within his rights to defend himself.
Right.
And that was the story. Did CNN get to that? Was that, you know, did they seem like they were at least, balanced in the way they looked at it? The answer is no. So maybe, and this is an interesting point, maybe the news is too important to be left to for-profit businesses. Maybe it's too important. Because certainly the effect it's had on the nation has, I don't think, has been a good one. I mean, we, as you said, we can't even agree on a set of facts to even begin the discussion. So I just find it very interesting. And what's going to change that? Is anything going to change it? So that's the world that we live in. That we don't.
Someone bring a lawsuit against them and bring them and then get nail their ass in court and have them be held liable for something that they created.
Do you remember the
that's going to make it stop? You hold people accountable.
Do you remember the McNeil Lehrer News Hour on PBS?
Yes.
Jim Lehrer was a Marine, 1955 to 1959 or something like that. And those guys, they did the news, they discussed the news in a balanced way. They didn't act like jackasses about it. There's no product like that anymore.
Well, who watches PBS?
Nobody.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you ever heard someone say, well, you know what? My number one news agency is PBS. That's where I get all my news, all my facts.
Rarely. I know people who listen to National Public Radio, but not too many people that turn to PBS for their news. You know, maybe more should, but again, what was great about that program was what I loved about the program was when they did their kind of roundtable discussion. I mean, it was anybody's. There was no screaming and yelling. I mean, there were smart people that, you know, that had great discussions that were good to listen to. And it, you kind of walked away smarter. I don't feel like that. What's interesting, when I watch that stuff now, I walk away more frustrated.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm like, I don't watch nightly news. I read. There's some news programs that I'll watch, and like Sunday morning and things like that. Some interviews that I watch, but I agree. Like most of us can't watch that stuff because it makes you crazy, right? And you're testament to it. You're a happier guy without watching it.
Oh, I'm an immensely more happy guy. It's just because, like I said, I'm tired of just watching it because you don't know what's truthful. When are they starting to tell the truth?
Bill from Ohio says Sean Hannity is not news.
No,
I don't think that was
the point. But people get their information. Shit, people watch Jimmy Fallon for news, and they get their news because from a comedian.
Right. That's pretty sobering when you read that in different polls. Like, where do you get your news? Facebook. Social media, blah, 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 blah.
Starting it live.
And you're looking, you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Let me just tell you, my problem with those programs is that I don't believe they're after the truth. They have an ideological spin, and they are they don't care about the truth. That it's about ideology to them. It's about ideology to them. So,
absolutely. Yes.
Listen to this. A professor is under fire for a white genocide tweet, blames violent races for the uproar. A Twitter backlash was swift for Michael Chiarello, a visiting researcher at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, who had a bad taste in his mouth after witnessing a kind act. Some guy gave up his first-class seat for a uniformed soldier. People are thanking him. I'm trying not to vomit or yell about Mosul, Chiarello tweeted on March 26th. And I guess he's got a little bit of a reaction to it. The professor gave a statement on Fox 29 that reads in part, 2 days after a U.S. airstrike incinerated an estimated 200 civilians in the Iraqi city of Mosul, I sent a personal tweet in reaction to what I considered a smug and self-congratulatory gesture by a first-class passenger to a uniformed soldier. Maybe predictably, my tweet was has since been fed into and misrepresented by the outrage machine that is the right-wing media. Needless to say, my personal views expressed off-campus have absolutely nothing to do with those of my employer, Drexel University. The university spokesman told the news station that the professor's comments are his own opinion and do not represent the university's opinion. Drexel is committed to and vigorously supports our ROTC students, student veterans, and alumni who have served in the military. Our support for student veterans has helped us create an inclusive campus culture that honors service and Drexel's deep conviction to American military history. Now, I mean, what an ass bag. What an absolute ass bag. You know what? And look, the United States, the DOD opened up a investigation into what happened. The Iraqis released a statement and said that they believe that it was done deliberately by ISIL, that these people were kept in this building, that they made it a strong point knowing what would happen, and that there was no indication that there were any civilians because they were fighting Iraqi special forces and Iraqi police units in the area, and that they had strong-pointed it, and they did it deliberately, which is kind of interesting. So I'm curious, Mike, given your experience in Iraq, would you eliminate that as a...
No, I've seen it firsthand. I've seen those shitheads, not ISIS, but the insurgents were fighting, use human shields in a building, detain them against their will, just to fight, use them as bargaining chips. Yes.
You know,
I've seen them dress as women to try and hide, you know, their identity. You have too.
Yep. The thing I learned in Iraq is if you believe in coincidences, you're a fool.
Yes.
You're a fool. If you think that didn't happen because they wanted it to happen, you're stupid. So the fact that that building would be dropped on it because it was such a strong point, and oh, by the way, there happened to be 130 Iraqi civilians that were in the building who couldn't flee a block away, you think that was a coincidence? You think those Iraqi people wanted to be in that building that was fortified and that was going to be used as a strong point? You believe that? So I don't know what the truth is, but I do know what our rules of engagement are. And because I used to apply them every day.
ISIS knows the strength of media. That's why they videotape all of their beheadings, because they know what kind of message that sends. So they know the strength of media. They use media to their advantage. They are stronger. Their IO campaign, we've always said this, the IO campaign of Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, ISIS, you pick a terrorist organization, is so much more advanced and so much better than any Western IO campaign. And when we put posters out of children handing flowers to, you know, like, that doesn't mean shit to them. We don't know what information like they do. They know how to capitalize on it and use it to their fullest benefit. We are always playing catch-up when it comes to IO.
Hold on. Let me read you an email. Hey, Mac, interesting you say that, because I saw that headline and I thought the same thing. For those of us who've been there, he said, and dare I say, a lot of us have been there multiple times to Iraq. The fact that anybody believes that's a coincidence is a joke. It's an absolute joke. Those people were in that building because there is not another card left to play. They are going to be crushed. So all of a sudden, when ISIS is about to get crushed and the only thing they have is the western side of Mosul left in their defense of this city, now all of a sudden we see this amazing instant spike in civilian casualties in the last 2 weeks. What a coincidence. Oh, that's right. There is no coincidence. It's choreographed. The people of Iraq know how to get out of the way. We've seen it. We saw it in the march up. We saw it in Fallujah. There was no refugee camp around Fallujah. They just left. They know how to get out of the way. They've been trying to get out of the way of this thing for a while. But guess what? ISIS won't let them because they're part of the bargaining chip. The bottom line is this. They're being used. They were in that building for a reason, and that was to create this headline. So,
and there's people out there that will defend that and say, no, you guys are wrong. There's no one that despicable in the world that would do that to another human being. You're like, where the hell, what rock do you live under?
Right. Now, let me just paint a picture for you. So we're watching with a Predator drone. Their Iraqi special forces and let's just say police units are moving on it. And this thing's now become, picture Stalingrad. Okay. A huge city like Mosul, four times the size of Fallujah. Right. And now you've kind of moved and you're like on maybe two and a half different sides of it. And this thing is not going away. Heavy machine guns keep coming. RPGs keep coming. And obviously it's a sturdy building. You're trying to blast it. You know, it's not working. Now you've got, so a drone is watching it. Now, of these 130 people, are you seeing what looks like women and children try to get out of it from this onslaught? No. So then when you get a request to drop on it, right, and it's been, there's been a fight going on for it all day, right, there's been no indication that there's anything other than combatants in this building, because it's a strong point. Oh, yeah, there just happened to be all these people. Nobody came. Nobody left. They just stayed there. Come on.
Right. And again, no malicious bone in any of these guys' bodies. Believe me, I've served with all of these types of people. They don't want to cause harm. Hell, I know Marines that lost their life trying to save civilians.
Right.
You know, they know the difference between combatants and non-combatants. They know. And the last thing they want to live with is the fact that they put a non-combatant in harm's way. But there are certain cases where they also understand that there's necessity. And necessity overrides that. And it's a shitty thing. And like, I've known Marines that have taken their life afterwards.
Right.
Because they never come to grips with it. So, yeah, the people will say, well, you know, it's malicious or it's being, no, it's not. No, you're talking about the wrong people, or you've never been there. You've never served with these people. You don't know what you're talking about. Quit reading the shit that you're reading and listening to the shit you're listening to, because you know what? They never served either. It's easy to pass judgment on those. It's hard to be those. So, like I always told people, if you don't like it, you know what? Go pick up a pack and a rifle and go do it. Experience it. And then come back and tell me what you think.
I'm trying to find the quote. This is from the Iraqis. A team of inspectors were touring a home where media outlets said dozens of dead bodies were extricated. Quote, accurate information from citizens showed that Daesh, the Iraqi state gangs, locked up families in booby-trapped homes and obliged them to stay there, using those houses for positioning of snipers and suicide fighters, and explode them once our troops advance. That house was booby-trapped completely. An exploded vehicle was found nearby, and 61 bodies were extracted. Speaking to eyewitnesses from the area, they said Daesh booby-trapped houses and forced families to go down into basements and use the house to shoot fire from at security forces. So, again, now, the Iraqis, are they perfect? No. But, again, I think if you ask Mike and I, which is the most likely scenario, that we happened to drop on a place where there were 130 civilians in, and after observing it for an extended period of time, there was no indication that they were in there. Do you believe that's what happened, or do you believe that those people were in there, forced to stay in there, and this thing is deliberately choreographed by ISIS? I think
yeah.
B. Exactly, B. 100% of the time be. So
yeah,
it'll be.
They're not stupid, man.
Yeah,
they know how to use information.
There's and again, there's no other card to play. The question is almost like Iwo Jima: how are we going to die, and how are we going to inflict as much pain on coalition forces as we can? How are we going to do that? And the way we're going to do that is we're going to ratchet up civilian casualties, because nobody cares if we die.
Right.
Nobody cares. So anyway, all right. Good stuff. What are you doing this weekend?
Let's see.
More happy stuff?
Yeah.
When do you teach the girls how to shoot again?
Next Tuesday, Wednesday.
It's fired up or what?
Yeah, I like that. It's rewarding because you see the benefit immediately, the confidence, self-esteem, everything. And it's amazing. You know, like I said, they're great learners. They listen. They apply everything you teach them. They have nothing but questions, and they just want to keep improving. And you know you're doing it right, because the husbands that you know, or the other, you know, the husbands you're meeting, them are like, man, I got to take this class. She's coming back, and she's correcting me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. From Montana, let me give a little background on Montana Man. In terms of, and I should get Montana Man and Rudy on and to do kind of a little bit of a roundtable about how these things get cleared. But normally the way this would get cleared is, you know, Mike would be out there doing stuff, clearing. I'm in charge. I'm like the offensive coordinator, right? And they bump into this, and then a request comes to drop this. We have very specific rules of engagement. It's going to be, you know, this is going to be ROE 429 Echo, blah, 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 either self-defense. If a NATO aircraft might be shooting for you, it's got to be something different. It's got to be a NATO version of that. And then what has to happen is that when we get ready to do this, you know, we have to have authority from, I think it's an 05 or above. So Montana Man would get called in, and he'd walk in and he'd say, what do you got? And I'd say, hey, sir, we've had eyes on this all day. They've run into a strong point, blah, 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 blah. And he'd say, any signs of civilians? No, sir. They've been there since yesterday afternoon trying to take this thing down. There's no signs of it. All right, got it. And he'd look at, you know, and so he said, is it good? And
I would say, the JAG would be in there too.
Yeah, the JAG might never even get to the JAG. I mean, if there was a question, we'd send for that guy. But, you know, so he'd look at Rudy, and Rudy would, you know, the officer would, you know, he'd shake his head. He's like, yeah, it's good. And
you're skipping some steps. You're saying, too, remember, then it's what kind of payload are we looking at dropping on? Because we want to minimize collateral damage. Right. It's going to be a 2,000-pound JDAM, or it's going to be a 1,000-pound JDAM, or 500-pound, or it's going to be a rocket, or it's going to be some, you know, so, okay, so give me what the blast effect would that be? What kind of structure are we looking at? What kind of potential damage do we have for that building right there? Because we're looking at this building. You know, so there's a lot of technical shit that's being played out here. It's not just bad guys. Yeah, go ahead, pull trigger.
No, and the ordinance we have now, you know, we have relatively small ordnance designed to be used in proximity to not cause a lot of damage. And then, but I will tell you what, if the battalion engage requested to drop this building, okay, because there was multiple snipers and they were using multiple floors, there would be no rational basis to push back against that. Because the guys on the ground who are engaged, and I think we have now forwarder controllers down to the battalion level for the Iraqis, at least their forward units anyway. Those guys on the ground, they're telling you what they see, and that's what you go by. You know, and you can right. augment it certainly with what we see. Look, we see nothing to cause us any concern other than what they're telling us, and then all the different things go through. You know, and it's really what do they want? Do they want to rubble the building, right? Or do they want to shoot precision guided munitions into one room to blow that room up, and then they think that'll take care of it, you know? Or you can drop a 2000 JDAM with a delayed fuse and rock that thing to the bottom, and so it's the weaponeering phase of it. And so I should, right. We should get those guys on and kind of walk through this, because people will, I think, you know, it's been really cool. General Kennedy came on, Paul Kennedy came on this week, and Dave Furness the week before. When you hear people talk at depth at what we do, you know, I think most people would go, wow, okay, I get it. I mean, that's pretty thorough, and we've been doing it, and we're pretty good at it. Not to say that we don't make mistakes, but I think people would find great comfort knowing the steps that we go through every time we do this stuff. And I can tell you this.
It's a long, and sometimes you're in, like you said, you're that guy on the ground, you're facing it, you're seeing it. It can seem pretty long and daunting, but you know that they're doing it right.
Right.
We're going to get this one right.
No, and I'll tell you what, it's difficult, because some days you look and you say, can't do it. Why? Because you lost what's called positive ID, and you can't tell me if there's no civilians in there. You can't tell me that. Okay? And so we can't drop. And normally, I mean, a lot of times it's after we've taken casualties, and people are pissed, and they want to kill somebody, and we can see them. They're there. But we're going to have to find another solution, all right? And I'll tell you, and we would, too. Sometimes we would drop ordnance in a field next door, hoping they'd take off and run. And once they got in the open, then we'd kill them. So, I mean, there was different ways you could do it. But I think people, when you hear us walk through that, you would and see the different considerations, you would feel great confidence in that. And let me read one more email, and I'll let you go, Mike. Mac, first of all, I want to thank you and Mike for doing this. I just started listening to All Marine Radio this week. I've heard things that I don't hear anywhere else. General Kennedy's interview, yesterday your interview with Bob Nielsen relative to getting guys construction management jobs. I love that stuff. But today has really made me smile, because those of us who've experienced this stuff know a truth that a lot of people would never even fathom, and that is the brutality of these jackasses that lay the wood to civilians on a regular basis. They don't care. I don't think the American people truly know that, but we do.
Right.
And you guys are spot on. If anybody believes that number of people were in that building for any other reason than to produce this headline, they are naive. And Mac, you're absolutely right. The Iraqis cured me, too, of believing that anything that I ever saw was a coincidence. It wasn't. If I saw it, they choreographed it, and they wanted me to see it, all in an effort to kill me or my Marines. I say, fuck them. Boom. Boom. You could hear it in Mike's voice, too, the hate. And Mike's happy man now, and you could hear it come through. He's happy man.
I hate those people, man.
Yeah.
Hate them. I understand why our World War II vets, when they came back, and to this day, they have that hatred for the Japanese. I'm not on board, man. I got it.
All right,
I know what they're capable of doing.
Yeah. So we'll see what the investigation brings out. But
they won't believe it, because they'll come back and say, well, the investigation was done by the Department of DOD. Of course they're going to clear themselves. You know, it's a perpetual of never-ending stupidity.
Right. And again, I don't know. The reason I'm always suspect of anything that the Iraqis put out, but I think our experiences in places like Fallujah, Ramadi, Husayba, Al Qaim, Iskandarita, Mahmadiyya, Najaf, is that the Iraqis, they know how to get out of the way. They know that. And it's not like this is the opening phases of this battle for Mosul. Why are these civilians at the forward edge of the battle area? Ask yourself that. In a population that knows how to get out of the way. Because they were prevented from leaving. That's why. That's the only reason.
Because they were a potential headline that they knew. And they knew when to play this out.
Right. All right,
man. There'll be many more guys.
Right.
Not the first time.
No. All right, man. Look, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Yep, we'll see you next week.
All right, bud. See ya. That is the one and only Michael Musselman here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. It's interesting. I'll read you one more email. Hey, Mac, I am a female, and then in parentheses, in case you can't tell by my name, Roberta. I listen to your show. I'm blown away sometimes by the things that I hear because it's simply a world that I've never lived in. I don't know. But I will tell you what strikes me most. You talk about the gunner's voice changing. Your voice changes too. And we can all hear the hate that you guys feel coming through the microphone, coming through the speaker when you guys talk about these things. And then when you recount your experiences, it's almost chilling, honestly, for those of us who've never experienced it. To live in that kind of a world with that kind of barbaric behavior, and we as Americans expect you guys not to participate in it and to be above it. It's honestly hard for us to fathom. God bless what you guys do. I appreciate the difficulty. I am paying attention to that story too. And I hope what you said is true. I guess we will see. Roberta. Yeah, can you imagine when that's your daily business? That's your daily job to go do that. And can you imagine when your guys get killed? And then you have to say, sorry, we can't drop. We have to do something else. Another one. This is from our F-18 guy. The Mosul Dam is going to blow, and their government is convincing them that the dam is safe. Yeah, you're seeing more and more activity around the dam that's between, let's see, I want to say on the other side of Raqqa. Is that the dam that the activity's been? Anyway, ISIS is not going out without a boom. Trust me. And those of us who fought, ISIS is simply the descendants of Al-Qaeda in Western Iraq. Okay? They are those guys. They fought against us and fought against us. And so, you will see they will not go out. And let me tell you, they're good at it. Ask anybody who is in Iraq. We have incredible respect for their ability to get close to us and to be deadly. The suicide bombers in Iraq were lethal and created a climate there in which a lot of civilians died because we had to protect ourselves. Sad. But that'll do it on a Friday. Another email. Hey, Mac. Just want to throw my two cents in. First of all, thanks for entertaining that. My experience was exactly the same as you, Mike, Montana Man, and your F-18 guy are talking about. Those of us who live that every day know the barbarity that these guys fight with. And again, I don't want people to take this wrong, but for those of us that have been there, as soon as we saw that 130 bodies were killed, we know what happened. They did that on purpose. I fought in Fallujah for the better part of the 7 months I was in Iraq. Did you ever see anything like this happen in Fallujah? Why was that? It's because they got out of the way. So 130 civilians in a building very close to the fight. That was an accident. Give me a break. Appreciate the discussion. One thing I love about All Marine Radio is that you guys entertain the truth. I might not always agree with everything that gets said, but you guys are open. You entertain it. And to me, it's what's missing in a lot of the discussion around the country. Have a great weekend. Semper Fidelis. Larry in Nebraska. Yeah, I mean, it's the truth. My thanks to today on for the Almarine Radio head chef, who got much love from Montana, by the way. And, no, you know what? This is the life that we lived, fighting these guys. And again, I would tell you that there's more bad stuff in the offing around Mosul. And it will get even worse when you get closer to Raqqa, whenever that happens. So, we'll see. But if you believe in coincidences, that just happened, you're an idiot. No, you're not an idiot. You're naive. You're ignorant. Because if you walked in our shoes for a week, you'd be cured of it. There is no coincidence. It happened because they wanted it to happen. So sad, but it is what it is. And that's why they need to be killed. They need to be located, closed with, and killed. And we need to stay with that, and then we need to stay in the region and help those people build something positive out of this. Right? Because we started it. That's right. Anyway, have a great weekend. My thanks to the Gunner for coming on. And most of all, as always, thank you all for listening. Do me a favor. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. This program repeats itself here momentarily. So if you missed the first part of it, sit tight and relax and listen. Hold on, another email. I think we hit a nerve. Mac, I was a forward air controller. I did tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. On the occasions that we could not drop, it's incredibly frustrating, but you know it's the right thing to do. It's the exact same thing that we see with our riflemen, right? Flip the weapon on safe and move instead of it shooting something that's shooting at you. Why? Because I wasn't sure if there wasn't civilians in there, sir. How many times have we all heard that? The most courageous, the most selfless, and the bravest young people on the planet. They do that all the time. Our medevac pilots, flying medevacs for civilians. It's very frustrating, but I think the American people, the better look they get of us in combat, the prouder they would be of us. My closing comment is to the professor at Drexel. I wish we could take him with us. I wish we could take him with us. And then I wish that once he saw the truth, that he will retract his tweet, apologize for his ignorant point of view, and understand that this in no way, shape, or form was an accident. It was designed by them. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the program. All the best. We'll have a good weekend. Thank you for all the email. And we'll follow the story. Because, look, we don't know. But let me tell you, what is our experience? I'm saying this for the third time. In the march up, in Ramadi, in Fallujah, and Mosul is not that far away. They always get out of the way. In fact, I will tell you this. I sat in an OPT that Colonel Joe Dunford intervened in about should we create a refugee camp outside of Fallujah, someplace where they could go, where there would be cots, where there would be water, there'd be propane gas for them to cook with, blah, blah, blah. And our conclusion was we shouldn't do that. Why? Because they get out of the way. They go find someplace else to go. We don't know where, but they do it. If we create a refugee camp, all we do is we make them a target. And if we allow them to gather, it's going to cost us a couple of battalions to secure it. And if we don't do that, and we create some kind of collection point, without any doubt, there will be suicide bombers and vehicles that head towards that area to kill as many civilians as possible. So presented to Colonel Joe Dunford, he said, good call. No refugee camp. They'll do what they do, which is get out of the way. They know how to do it. So all of a sudden they don't do it. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Have a great weekend on a Friday. All Marine Radio. Out.